nation's oldest literary magazine is at a crossroads now. The new issue of the Paris Review is out now on newsstands, the first under a new editor put together by a new staff in a new office. The quarterly magazine also has a new look, but some former editors are worried about what's between the covers. They say the Paris Review may be new, but it's not improved, and it's betraying the vision of its founder, George Plimpton. From New York, Tom Vitale has the story.
This is what the office of the world's most famous literary magazine sounds like as the staff scrambles to close out its new issue and get it to the printer. It may sound like the only thing working in this open Tribeca loft is the air conditioning, but a half dozen staffers hunch over desks across the room, pounding away at the essential work of the literary magazine, reading the more than 1,000 manuscripts submitted for the new issue. Editor Philip Gurevich plucks a short story from a wire basket.
Here's a story or a submission of 10 pages, and it's got already three handwritten pages with about 8 entries from different readers saying what they think of it, and so a kind of discussion takes place in that form.
The readers at the Paris Review are doing what they've always done, poring over every submission that comes in over the transom. In literary circles, this is sacred work. Gurevich and his staff are carrying on the legacy of George Plimpton, who founded the magazine with a few friends in Paris in 1953, and then ran it out of the basement of his New York apartment for the next 50 years. In that cramped subterranean office in 1987, George Plimpton said the magazine's greatest achievement was publishing emerging writers.
We're sort of proud of the fact that we published some of the first Beckett, and some of the first Philip Roth stories, James Saulnier stories. Jay McInerney, I think, was encouraged by the Paris Review to go on and write his book, Bright Lights, Big City.
Throughout the 1990s, the Paris Review continued to discover new talent.
On the morning the last Lisbon daughter took a turn at suicide, it was Mary this time, and sleeping pills, like Therese. The two paramedics arrived at the house knowing exactly where the knife drawer was, and the gas oven, and the beam in the basement from which it was possible to tie a rope.
Jeffrey Eugenides was virtually unknown in 1991 when the Paris Review published an excerpt of his quirky, offbeat first novel.
After the first chapter of The Virgin's Suicides was published in the Paris Review, Lynn Nesbitt, a literary agent, saw it and called me in and said she wanted to represent me, and I said yes. So really I went from a state of anonymity to being a published writer because of George Plimpton and the Paris Review.
The Virgin Suicides was later published to critical acclaim and then adapted for Hollywood. Eugenides' second novel, Middlesex, won the 2003 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction. George Plimpton was loath to take credit. He attributed the Paris Review's eye for talent to a young and committed staff.
I just have a feeling that, judging from the staff we had now, if I got run over by a taxi, I think the magazine would continue.
And it did, after Plimpton died suddenly from natural causes 2 years ago at the age of 76. Managing editor Bridget Hughes became editor-in-chief, and she says she tried to run the magazine the way Plimpton had, listening to her staff just as Plimpton listened to her when she arrived as an intern fresh out of college.
Every week or every other week you would have these editorial meetings, and people would talk about their opinions about stories, should it or shouldn't be accepted, and your opinion was definitely not only welcome but expected. And to have, your opinion about a story matter seemed like a pretty remarkable thing.
But earlier this year, Bridget Hughes and her entire staff were fired by the Paris Review's board of directors.
We came in, we had big meetings after George died. We figured we had to get a hold of this thing. We're just going to die out very slow, not a very good death.
Novelist Peter Matheson was a lifelong friend of Plimpton's and a co-founder of the Paris Review, although he hadn't been personally involved with running the magazine for decades. Matheson says in recent years, the Paris Review had lost its edge.
These people were perfectly able to bring out an issue, but we needed somebody with more. You're not going to replace Plimpton. You're not going to replace the social graces and the sense of humor. But you do need somebody who's willing to take chances and turn things around and shake it up where it's gotten kind of stodgy, which I think it had.
We were nominated for the National Magazine Award for Fiction the year that George died and the year after he died. I don't think that anyone in the literary community who wasn't on that board thought that the magazine was not operating professionally.
Elizabeth Gaffney was the senior editor. She'd worked at the Paris Review for 16 years before she was fired this spring.
I think a bunch of septuagenarians resented the successes of a bunch of young editors who might have had a different set of goals and tastes. And they had been totally disengaged from the magazine in all those years. I think they just wanted to remake it with their own hands.
The two issues of the Paris Review Gaffney worked on after Plimpton's death were, in Peter Matheson's words, pretty good. But Matheson says the new editor, Philip Gravitch, has revitalized the magazine.
There's an energy there now that there just has not been since the old days in Paris, really.
But the Paris Review has always been a fiction magazine, and Philip Gravitch is a nonfiction writer. Gravitch has redesigned the Paris Review, adding a new typeface and reviving an old logo. And he says he's made it easier to handle. The old review was like a thick paperback book. In the new issue, the pages are larger, and there are half as many of them.
If you look at the magazine in recent years, it was literally physically difficult to open. And you have to kind of open it up and break the spine, or it snaps shut like a Venus flytrap. When we got our dummy books back from the printer with our new paper and so forth, I opened it up, it just lay flat on the table. And it was exhilarating because you thought, ah, now there's a book for reading.
Readers of the new Paris Review will see an interview with Salman Rushdie, a novella from the South African writer Damon Galgut, excerpts from the notebooks of poet Elizabeth Bishop that will be published in hardcover next year, and the first published story by American writer Lisa Halliday. The issue also includes three nonfiction portraits of Chinese criminals by dissident writer Lau Yiwu. Former editor Elizabeth Gaffney says the Paris Review has become just like The New Yorker.
I don't think all the work we did building the Paris Review readership and fundraising from people who cared about fiction and poetry is going to be directed to a good end if it's going towards more commercially oriented nonfiction and even literary fiction that's probably going to come out in a high print run literary edition from Knopf or Random House. I mean, the really great work was to get published things that would otherwise not have been published. And I don't have any inkling that that will still be a primary goal of the magazine. It may be. I hope so. I hope I'm wrong.
Elizabeth Gaffney and Bridget Hughes are launching a new literary magazine this winter called A Public Space, which they describe as a reimagining of George Plimpton's Paris Review for the 21st century. For NPR News, I'm Tom Vitale in New York.
And you can hear Tom's 1987 interview with George Plimpton on our website, npr.org.